Welcome in the latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Braden. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Boss on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
Oh, man, I am fired up, Shane. We were just talking about it off air, but we got one of our favorites on the show, Mike Griffith from Dog Nation. Long interview. You know, of course, we hit on the Dogs, but he's pumping up the Vols. He's pumping up Shane Beamer. He's trashing Alabama. I mean, what more could you want from a Mike Griffith interview? You know what?
Yeah, I know. I'm glad you put that little warning label. A lot of people are like, oh, God, here we go. More Georgia singing, you know. But, no, you're right. He really touched on quite a few teams here. Vol fans especially, man. I was ready to run through a damn brick wall. I was like, yeah, Mike, you're on to something, you know. Of course, you know, he used to be a Tennessee homer, you know.
Yeah. So I can't wait to play that one, Shane. It has been a very slow news day, but thanks once again. We got this outstanding call line, and our guy Trey from Northwest Arkansas, he's been calling about every day. So I felt bad that we've not gotten to one of his questions yet, but I thought this was the best one yet from Trey. So, again, we got this call-in line. We're open to any communication you want to send us at 615-965-5152. It's absolutely free. Doesn't cost you a dime. And the best part, you're helping us out during the off season because we need the content. So let's kick it over to our buddy, cousin Trey from Northwest Arkansas.
Yeah, this is Trey from Northwest Arkansas. I was wanting to ask, why are we hyping A&M up so much? It just went 5-7. I understand the number one recruiting class, but going 5-7 and saying that they can win the division? I don't understand it. I am a big old Arkansas homer, so maybe that's the reason. And I was also saying that Arkansas can hit 9 wins, I believe, really well this year. So I was just wanting to see what you think about Arkansas hitting 9 wins and why is A&M getting so much hype?
All right, Shane, so I'm also loving the fact a lot of these callers, they're calling in and they're hitting us up with two questions. So let's tackle the first one, Texas A&M. Why are we hyping up Texas A&M? We do this every year, Shane.
Yeah, I know.
We're guilty of, no doubt. But, you know, what is the thing we say more often than anything is the players matter more than anything. And Texas A&M is just ridiculously talented. And talented at key positions, Shane. Their defensive line, I believe they've got about 3, 4, 5-star prospects, and they got about 8, 9, 4-stars just on that defensive line I'm talking about. Experienced safeties, which is paramount to a defense there. And probably my favorite thing, Shane, about the Aggies, everybody knows how I like to pile on Jimbo. Well, he's giving up the play calling duties. I mean, I think that's a game changer. If this was just the same old, Jimbo Fisher calling the plays, I don't care who he's got to work with, I would not have faith in the offense. I do have faith in Bobby Petrino. And Trey from Northwest Arkansas, he should have faith in Bobby Petrino, too. He knows all about him. He saw him just last year with Missouri State, who gave Arkansas a run for their money with freaking Missouri State, Shane. Just imagine what he's going to do with A&M that has Connor Wigman, or perhaps Max Johnson. I still think it'll be Connor Wigman. You got Anaya Smith. You got Moose Muhammad. You got the entire offensive lineback. You got 5-star running back Reuben Owen. So,
yeah.
We're trying not to go too crazy. We're not picking A&M to win the West like someone did last year, but we're just seeing the ingredients to a much, much better team this fall.
Yeah, and I think that's the key. You know, we're optimistic, but still, you know, the head coach is still Jimbo Fisher, and he burned us last year, man. I'm afraid to put any of my chips on the Aggies right now. Do I think they have potential to be one of the best teams in the SEC West? Absolutely. Mainly because of what you just said. It's talent, man. They got a roster. You think about what's built some of the best SEC football programs. Texas A&M has those tangible pieces, and I think that's the main thing here. Now, relinquishing the offensive coordinator position, I think, is pivotal. Letting this offense cook, man, because there was times last year it was slow. It was methodical. I mean, it was almost embarrassing to watch. It felt like I was back in the 90s, man, early 90s, late 80s, watching a college football team. It's not like that, man. You got to adapt. You got to be able to cut loose. And I think, if anything, man, maybe a little release of the reins may help Jimbo to kind of take more of that CEO role, which I think once he does that, man, Texas A&M, the sky's the limit. This program is going to continue to bring in talent year after year. And, yes, I am very optimistic, but I'm also – you know, I mean, last year hurt, brother. It still stings. Yeah. The fact that I picked this team to win the West and the SEC championship, and they didn't even make a bowl game. So my high may be different than Cousin Trey's high. You know what I'm saying? Right now, my high, you know, 8-9 games. You know, do I see – it's one of those that I think they've got a higher ceiling than a lower floor.
Yeah, and I promise, Shane, if they do not live up to the hype, if they're terrible again – we'll never hype them up again.
No.
At least while Jimbo's the coach. Let's make that promise right now.
I'll tell you, I've got so much material to pile on Jimbo that when the day comes, if the day comes, I will be the first in line to tell you that he's a terrible coach. But I am ready to delete it, Mike. And you know how you delete it? Winning games, man. Just win some damn games. So I think they're going to be able to, and I think they'll be much improved this season for sure.
Yep. All right. So, second part of Trey's question, Shane, can Arkansas, you know, he's saying 8-9 win team. It's not totally out of the realm of possibility. I don't want to go full, you know, Homer breakdown of the schedule. We'll save that during fall camp. But I will, you know, we did this with Florida the other day. Let's run down the schedule real quick. Let's try to be realistic here.
Okay.
Opening the season, Western Carolina at home. There's your first win. Second game at home, Kent State, should be another win. BYU, this time at home, you waxed them last year. That's a win. LSU at LSU, it's tricky. Let's say 50-50. We're already doing the homer thing.
Wait, you're doing the homer thing, man. That's a little optimistic. Yeah. Let's say 75-25 LSU.
Okay.
That may be your first loss right there. If we're again, calm down, Arkansas fans. We got a show for you coming up, and you're going to love exactly where we go. But let's just be real for a second. I think right now, until we see a drastic – maybe, who knows? They blow the doors off these first three teams. Yeah, maybe we're saying this is a 50-50 game. But right now, dude, I mean, we got to give LSU the edge here.
Right. All right, how about Texas A&M, of course, in Arlington? You know, I want to call this a 50-50 game, Shane. We just hyped up A&M, but, you know, we got to call it like it is. A&M has owned Arkansas. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I kind of lean toward A&M winning that game, but you could certainly talk me into Arkansas winning that game. This is probably the one, Shane, where they got to win it if they're going to get to 9 wins. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the better way to tee this up, Mike, is those two games right there, Texas A&M, LSU, do they win one of them? Yeah, I could definitely see that happening.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, so let's give them one of those. Then they go at Ole Miss. That's winnable, but that's going to be tough. At Alabama, I'm not giving you that one. But then you go Mississippi State at home. They could conceivably win that. At Florida, let's just, for the sake of argument right now, let's give them that. Auburn at home. Florida International at home, and then Missouri at home. I mean, I think the back half, aside from Alabama, you're not going to just win every game, but it's conceivable that they do win all those aside from Alabama. So, I mean, I think 9 wins optimistically, I think that is possible. I don't think Razorback fans should be sitting here saying there's no way we could win 9. Do you?
No, I think that's the key, Mike. It's possible. We're not saying that it's probable, but we're saying that there is a chance that stars align, KJ stays healthy. You know, this defense is legit, like they've been touting. No more injuries. Pray to God that doesn't happen. Yeah, I think, honestly, Arkansas potentially could win 9-10 games. But, you know, again, stars got to align, Mike. You know what I'm saying? They got to be perfect. And there's, like we keep hinting at it, there's an episode that we do, guys, where we're going to go deep dive into Arkansas's camp. We're going to talk about their depth. We're going to have people on. And then at the very end, me and Mike like to put on our optimistic glasses. Then we'll be Razorback fans and show you a way they can make it to the college football playoffs. But until then, Mike, 8-9, yeah, that's realistic.
But it will require, like we said, it'll probably require an upset on the road.
Yeah.
Or maybe just an outright upset of an A&M at LSU. And we're just chalking Florida up on the road to a win. Florida, if they turn the corner, that's a lot tougher than it looks. If Auburn under Hugh Freeze catches fire, suddenly that's a very dangerous game. And hell, same thing we said about A&M, Shane. Let's call it like it is. Missouri has owned Arkansas. So I know that game's in Fayetteville, but we cannot chalk that up either to an automatic win. So there are hurdles. It's not a slam dunk, but it certainly is not something that is unrealistic either, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and Mike, you know, one of the things that's kind of haunted Arkansas here is it's you know, they've got some great victories. They've got some upset victories, but they've also dropped some of these 50-50 games. They can't afford to do that, man. You know, even some teams, you know, you can't be the favorite and then lose that game. That's the kind of season that's infuriating if you're a Razorback fan, because we're this many years in, we can't afford that. So 50-50 games have all got to go your way, man.
All right, Shane, so we delayed long enough. Let's get to this outstanding interview with Mike Griffith of Dog Nation. All right, we're pleased to be joined once again by Mike Griffith, just one of the absolute best out there covering the SEC. And, of course, he covers the Georgia Bulldogs for the AJC's Dog Nation. Mike, it's an honor to have you back on the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, Mike. Thank you.
You know, I don't know. I've heard you say this, Mike. I got a question for you, and I don't know if it's a joke or what, but I swear I'm not trying to poke fun at the guy, but I have heard you say, and not just you, I've heard others say it, Stetson Bennett, did he graduate from Georgia? I'm confused about how that's even a question.
Yeah, no, Mike. You know, he didn't. I mean, Georgia advertised at the championship game that they thought that he was going to graduate this spring semester. He was listed as the people, but I don't know that he took the classes this spring. So, you know, based on what University of Georgia put out on the big board there at the championship game, I don't believe so.
I mean, how is that even possible considering how long he's been there?
I think he was probably too busy playing football. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he changed his major a few times. He went to junior college for a year. Maybe the credits from junior college didn't transfer. I'm not real clear on it. Just like you, I was a little surprised when I heard that. But you know, what's remembered is the football part, obviously. And Georgia's a top 20 academic institution, but it's a tough place to graduate from too.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, there's a reason I went to Tennessee, Mike. I couldn't get into a school like Georgia. But
I said, now you're laying it on thick.
One thing I really wanted to ask you about, because I just thought this was so awesome that you guys do this over at Dog Nation. You got a Dog Nation cruise. Now, you told me you're working here. This is not just a pleasure cruise for you. But what is it like being with over 100 Bulldogs there after Kirby Smart led that program to back-to-back national championships? I mean, these fans have got to be on cloud nine. Can you give us some insight into what goes on a Dog Nation cruise?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of barking at the meals, as you might imagine. I don't know if the Royal Caribbean director really appreciated that. But they were allowed to bark once per dinner. They were allowed once. It couldn't get too out of hand, though. But yeah, to your point, I mean, it's obviously a fan base that's kind of enjoying their time on top of the world. I mean, it's you know, to win back-to-back national championships after, you know, going 41 years without a title and, you know, kind of having to hear that from all the rival schools. They, you know, and the folks that are on the cruise, I mean, they're on there for a good time. And, you know, we had a Q&A session and, you know, we, you know, rewatched some games and, you know, have some trivia nights. We just had fun. I mean, it's kind of like what you would think it would be. It's kind of like, you know, 4 or 5 days of tailgating only on a ship, I guess is probably the best way to put it.
Hmm. Well, there's reason to celebrate, Mike. Obviously, not just the championships, but the NFL draft. And over at Dog Nation, you just covered it. Georgia having, you know, the best defense of the modern era. It's not even really debatable after this this latest NFL draft, is it?
I don't think so. You know, I kind of thought that before. But, you know, now when you look at, you know, 7 first-round draft picks off that defense, I mean, statistically, it was there. Mike, can you believe that Georgia is ranked ahead of Alabama for the last 5 straight years in total defense? I mean, it just, the narrative hasn't really caught up with the reality yet, and it takes time. You know, I understand that, and you understand that. And for years and years and years, I mean, people just say, oh, well, it's, you know, it's Alabama. And, you know, now Georgia's kind of come along. I mean, it's kind of like Kentucky basketball. We all, you know, oh, Kentucky basketball hadn't really won a title in a long, long time. And yet, you know, the narrative is just, you know, Kentucky. So Georgia's still working on that. You know, they're, you know, Kirby's looking for a three-peat, which would, I would think that would certainly, you know, set him apart and probably even put him on the SEC Mount Rushmore.
Mm-hmm. What's your confidence level that Georgia has the pieces to where the defense can remain at that caliber next season?
Well, you just asked 2 questions in one there. So I think they still have a chance to win another national title, but I don't necessarily think the defense can be the same as last year's, because I think Jalen Carter was such a generational player. I mean, I look back at the Tennessee game, it's probably the best example. And, you know, he had 2 forced fumbles, and I think he had a sack or 2 and 2 or 3 pressures. And, you know, between him and the noise, Tennessee had to used 3 timeouts and had 6 false starts. I mean, that's unique. That's a combination of a unique player and a unique setting in that particular game. Obviously, it was deafening, 136 decibels that day at Sanford Stadium. Obviously, they'd been challenged by you know, former Tennessee quarterback Eric Ainge, who in all, by all rights and in all fairness, Eric did own Georgia. He was outstanding. I hope people that, you know Eric Ainge really got a chance to see him play, because he was a fantastic quarterback. And, in fact, I think Carson Beck, Georgia's next quarterback, reminds me a lot of Eric Ainge with, you know, the arm talent, the mobility, and the stature. But anyway, getting back to the point, I don't think that – I know there's not. And Kirby said they don't have a train wrecker. That's what Kirby calls them. They don't have a train wrecker or a havoc maker. So they're going to have to do some things differently. You know, Nolan Smith has moved on, another first-round pick, and – Nolan was once the number 1 overall recruit in the country, and with good reason. There's a lot of talent there, but it's young. Their schedule is conducive to the team improving as the year goes on, but can they have someone playing at Nolan's level? Can they find someone like Jalen? I don't think so. So I think you're going to drop off at those 2 positions. Now, their linebackers are really good, and the secondary is really good. But you and I, Mike, have watched enough football to know, you know, if you're not dominant on your interior defensive line, you know, things are going to be different. I'm not saying that their defense is going to be bad, because I don't think it will. It could still lead the SEC for all I know. But when you say, is it going to be the same? I don't think so. I just don't think so.
Hmm. Well, also at Dog Nation, Mike, you wrote about Kenny McIntosh. You got to go behind the scenes during that draft process. Can you share with the listeners, what was that like? I mean, how great of a moment was that when he finally got called there by the Seattle Seahawks?
Well, it was a great moment. And, you know, every now and then, you know, things happen, you can't explain it. And, you know, Kenny ran a 4.6 240, which it's not lightning fast, but Knowshon Moreno ran a 4.6 240, and he was a first-round draft pick. And Nick Chubb ran like a 4.52 or 4.53, and, you know, he's the best running back in the NFL. And I just did a study, and actually, you know, Kenny's home run numbers in terms of long runs, he actually had more than Zamir White, who ran a 4.40 and had more carries. So the 40 is probably overrated by some teams. And I talked with Jim Nagy, the former Seahawks and Patriots scout, who's now the executive director of the Senior Bowl. And he said, yeah, that number's way blown out of proportion, top end speed. It's really about the burst. Certainly in Kenny's case, it's, you know, great burst, great vision, great cutback ability, great receiver. Actually, Jim told me the Senior Bowl had Kenny rated higher than Zach Charbonnet, who the Seahawks took in the second round. And Jim actually made a call to the Seahawks to that effect in the sixth round and said, look, Kenny McIntosh sitting on the board, man, this is crazy. We have him graded higher than the guy you took in the second round. And, you know, the Seahawks had done their homework and they liked him. And, but as far as inside the house, you know, there was probably over 50, I'd say probably 50 or 60 family members there. They'd rented a villa. Kenny's big brother, RJ, who played at Miami and has been in the NFL the last 4 years, was there. His older brother, Dion, that played at Notre Dame and Washington State, that's headed to the CFL this summer, was there. And mom and dad and, you know, uncle. And yeah, I was right there in the middle of it. And, you know, he's a guy that I covered. I did an interview with him before he came to Georgia. One of our series, one of our ventures was to talk to kids. We called it the Next Generation series. And so I got to know him and his family on the front end, and, you know, you just kind of stay in touch with folks. And on the back end, they invited me down there, and little did I know what sort of drama would play out, to the point where, you know, we're standing in the kitchen and the free agency offers are coming, and you've got Dallas and Philadelphia bidding against one another in a free agent deal. And Philadelphia was ready to go up to $200,000 and a $20,000 signing bonus. And Dallas was at 150 and contemplating picking them with their next pick in the seventh round, or whether they were going to go up money wise. And out of nowhere, Drew Rosenhaus texts in, you know, Seahawks, all caps. And, you know, Kenny, you know, he kept a stiff upper lip, but, you know, it just, the relief just poured out, you know, the tears just poured. And I put a video up of him and his family, and it's about a 2.5 minute video. It's got almost 50, I think it's over 40,000 views for sure. Just an emotional household, you know, and the household just tells the story. And, you know, watching this and seeing before your own eyes someone's dreams come to reality is, it was a great moment. I mean, I've covered a lot of really cool things, whether it's, you know, Auburn or Tennessee's undefeated seasons in the 90s, or, you know, Coach Stallings, I still remember his final game well. I remember, you know, the London Olympics were fantastic with Phelps and Bolt and being in those stadiums and arenas. But being in the home of a player and knowing what he went through at Georgia, it was special. And I'm thankful. It's one of those times and Mike, you've got a lot of them. You know, you're somewhat of a rock star now in the SEC, but it's one of those times when you appreciate your job and you appreciate the moments that you have. And it really was. It was really special.
Well, I'm glad you shared that story, Mike. And, you know, in all your time in the SEC covering all these great teams and everything, does Georgia right now, the way they're playing under Kirby Smart, are they on a different level in your mind, just on the teams you've covered? And, you know, do you think they could possibly keep us going for, you know, and I'm not saying, you know, I'm not asking you to predict if they're going to win the third one in a row here, but could you see them winning, I don't know, 2-3 more titles under Kirby in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, it's kind of a yes and no, right? And I hate to be on the fence with you, but, you know, covering those programs and, you know, seeing Alabama and Tennessee, Michigan State rise to great heights, I can tell you nobody sees it coming when the team drops off. Mm. There's never a warning, right? You never see it coming. I remember being in the Caribbean with Mike Hamilton and Bruce Pearl on one of Tennessee basketball's kind of holiday tournaments, if you will. They were down in St. Thomas, and I can't quite remember the year. I think they played Purdue, and they might have lost to Purdue in the championship of this little 4-team or 8-team tournament down in St. Thomas. You'll have to check the record books. But I remember sitting across from Hamilton, and, you know, Pat Head-Summit was still there, as well as Philip Fulmer. And, you know, Bruce had really changed the culture at Tennessee. And I sat across from Hamilton, and I said, you know what? Things are never going to get better for you. He said, well, that's a heck of a thing to say. And I said, well, I'm just telling you. You got Philip Fulmer, you got Pat Summit, now you got Bruce Pearl. I said, these things just don't last. They just don't, you know? And he goes, well, yeah. I said, you know, have you ever thought about just, you know, cashing in? And, you know, if you were ever going to take another job, I mean, I just can't imagine. Well, no, we're going to, we're going to keep this thing rolling for years, he said. Well, I don't need to tell you what happened. And same thing in Michigan State. I remember, you know, we met Mark D'Antonio and Tom Izzo. Yeah. Are they the best football basketball combo in the country? Michigan State, three straight years in the top 10 in football, beat Ohio State, you know, for the Big Ten title. And Urban Meyer, with all that talent, and D'Antonio and the Spartans take him down. And Izzo, of course, just being Izzo, I mean, arguably the best coach in basketball right now. And, you know, certainly a celebrated figure and champion for years in the Big Ten. And you know, that was the best. So I'm not predicting the downfall. I'm not saying that Georgia can't sustain. But just for perspective, Steve Spurrier was at Florida 12 years. And I think he won 6 or 7 SEC titles in those 12 years, depending on whether or not you want to give him credit for 1990, which was forfeited because of the coach before him. Kirby's already been at Georgia 7. This is year 8. And Kirby's 47. And Kirby's making a lot more money than Steve Spurrier ever did. You know, he's knocking out, what, 11 million a year, Mike. Mm. Not to say that he wouldn't want to coach another 20 years, but he doesn't have to.
Right.
And he doesn't, you know, will he coach another 10 years? I think 10 years, you know, when you look around and you see guys like Chris Peterson and Bob Stoops that, you know, stepped away, especially with the recruiting clock and the way Kirby burns. So I guess what I'm saying is this. I think Georgia is in a prime position relative to how other programs have been rolling. Yes, I've seen comparable times. I mean, Tennessee was fantastic under Philip Fulmer from, you know, the late 90s into the, you know, early 2000s. They didn't win back-to-back titles, but they could have easily won 2 or 3. I mean, just imagine if there was a 4-team playoff, what a difference that would have made. I mean, think about this. Georgia doesn't win the 2021 title if there's not a 4-team playoff. They wouldn't have been there. They lost to Alabama in the SEC title game. That'd have been it. That's it. They wouldn't have gotten a do-over.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't have gotten a do-over. So it's a different game now than it was. You know, Spurrier didn't have second chances. Fulmer didn't have second chance. And I'm not saying that makes it any less. You could argue that it makes it more difficult because you got to play more games. But I'm just saying it's different now. It's apples and oranges. But what Kirby's got going is the level of buy-in. He's got a fantastic staff. He's got continuity. And he is the modern day master at roster management, and that's the key. I mean, yes, you have to recruit well, but you also have to retain well. You know, we talk about all these Alabama recruiting classes we want, but how many of those guys are transferring out? Right. Same with Georgia. Georgia's had a lot of talented guys transfer out, not to the extent of Alabama. The continuity on the staff is important. The ability to generate NIL deals and maintain a locker room chemistry, even while players see what other guys on the team are driving and know that certain players are getting more money than others. Now, players were always getting money. Now, you know that, Mike, and I know that, and fans have figured that out. Jimbo Fisher spilled the beans on that 2 years ago when he said that on the Paul Feinbaum show that there was NIL, you know, but we just didn't know it, right? Didn't he say something to that effect? There was always NIL, just we didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
I think he said that. Something to that effect, and everybody went, wow, Jimbo wasn't lying. He was shooting from the hip. He's just telling you how it is. There's always been NIL, okay? We just, but the key was nobody talked about it.
Right.
And now there were two reasons for that. One, it was a violation, and, you know, half the programs in the country could have, you know, probably gone down, if not more. And by the way, just as many in the Big Ten as the SEC, they like to pretend they're on a higher level, but it's just, that's not true. Same thing, Southwest Conference, back. All these schools got people paying. It's the nature of the beast. But one, it was illegal by NCAA rule. But two, it kept things good in the locker room. Because if you don't know what the guy next to you is making, it's a lot easier to maintain that staff harmony. Just like where people that are listening to this podcast work. People don't talk about their salaries, right? Mm-hmm. The bosses just, you know, cheers, oh, don't talk about your salary. You know, if you're going to get a raise, you know why they tell you that? Because they don't want chaos. They don't want people pissed off that somebody that they feel is doing the same job as them is making more money. That's why nobody talks about what they make. That's why it's not transparent. That's corporate. That's just, well, in football, college football now, these college players are dealing with some of the same complexities that professional sports deal with. You know, when one guy's making more money. And, Mike, it gets to the point where you wonder, does a coach feel pressured to play one player over another because he's paying more money for him? I can tell you firsthand in my experience, and I won't identify the school or the situation, but I've seen that happen at least 3 or 4 times where I thought there was a better player on the bench and the guy that was playing ahead of him because Billy Booster was paying him more money and the coach felt pressure to pay him. Otherwise, Billy Booster's going to stop buying players for him, right? So all these things are now coming to the surface. And, gosh, I don't know if you really wanted this philosophical discussion today or not.
Well, I appreciated it. Last thing on Georgia I got for you, Mike. You've been very vocal about this, and I agree with you. But I think Kirby Smart is a better coach than Nick Saban right now. I'm not saying their legacies, their entire tenures, but right now, I mean, I don't even think it's a debate anymore, given what Georgia's done the last 2 years. And I've even seen Georgia fans argue, well, heck, Nick Saban has, it's just not been the same without Kirby. I think he could easily make that case as well. Why is it that you believe Kirby is better than Nick Saban right now?
Well, Mike, I can't think of another sport where a coach that's won the last two championships in a row isn't considered the best coach. And I covered Alabama, so I understand Alabama fans, I think, pretty well, as much as anyone. And I'll start by saying I begin my SEC football Mount Rushmore with Paul Bear Bryant. And I was very, very, very fortunate to cover the Crimson Tide early in my career. I've been fortunate the whole way, man. I'm not gonna lie to you. I've been blessed. My first year covering the SEC was 93. I covered an 11-0 Auburn team and got to know Terry Bowden and learn all about the Bowden legacy and Bowden family through that beat. And Auburn fans were fantastic. It's a fantastic fan base. They're warm. They're engaging. They're welcoming. Their issues that usually occur higher up in some of the higher politics that we won't get into. And then covering Alabama at a time when Gene Stallings was there and the way he saw my ambition, the fact that I was that guy from Mobile that would drive up there twice a week and stay in a hotel up there, 5 days a week. I think he saw that and appreciated that. And him and his staff really went out of their way, Dabo Swinney being one of them, to bring me into their offices, to sit me down, to, explain how college football worked and why things were the way they were and really take time for me. And it was incredible. And then to take the Tennessee job before the 1998 season, Mike, and cover the 98 Vols and get to know T. Martin really well. Me also being a Mobile native like T, we like to say we're from LA, Lower Alabama, and still friends with T to this day. And get to, Al Wilson and just the incredible stars that were recruited and build relationships with coaches on that staff. John Chavis, fantastic man, great defensive mind. So I've been really blessed along the way. I want to say that up front, and I don't want to insult anybody, and I'm very careful about that. And Nick Saban, with his six titles, he's unbelievable, right? But my Mount Rushmore starts with Paul Bear Bryant. That said, Bear's last 2 years, he was looking at this like he was 8-4, and he was 9-2, and the year before that he was 10-2. Now, I think Paul Bear Bryant is the greatest coach of all time in college football. But if I look at his last 3 years, he was 10-2 and 9-2 and 8-4. Was he the best coach in college football those 3 years? So I think that's kind of the conversation we're having here. I don't want to take away any of Saban's greatness, but I have to look at the results. I can't just, like John Calipari. I look at Cal, and listen, I love Cal. I do. I love him as a reporter because he's just fantastic theater. I think he knows basketball. I think he knows people. But do I think John Calipari is the best coach in college basketball right now? No. His salary says he is, but I don't think he is right now. I don't want to take away anything he's done before, but it's been, 10 years since he's won a title, something like that, Mike? So now, and that's an extreme case, but my point is, I think people are shortchanging Kirby Smart if they don't give him credit for winning the last two championships. And as I said, being the master, the modern-day master of roster management. And to me, that is the key right now, that we're in this huge transition with transfers and NIL. Roster management is more important. And Kirby's X's and O's are pretty doggone good, too. Let's remember, some of Nick's best teams were coordinated and built and recruited by Kirby Smart. Throw Jeremy Pruitt in there, by the way. Jeremy was the defensive coordinator for a couple of those teams. I think ESPN ranks number one and number two, and hopefully we'll, you know, I think we'll soon see Jeremy back on the sideline based on, you know, what little I know about that hearing. But, you know, we'll find things out. That's a whole other story for you for another day. But, yeah, I hope that makes the case without hurting anyone's feelings.
Hmm. Well, on the other end of the spectrum, Mike, I wanted to ask you real quick about Billy Napier at Florida. Do you think, you know, he just had six players drafted, including the number four, overall selection in the draft. Does that help his case or does it hurt his case that he's the right man for the job down there in Gainesville?
You know, I don't know if there was a right man for the job. You know, the Gators have kind of fallen behind on their facility. They're just now catching up. They got their new football building going. But the recruiting, I think, had dropped off some. I think, you know, that you know, bears out when you mentioned the draft numbers. I think Billy Napier in a vacuum is a really good coach. I do. I know I poke fun and you know, I ridicule the question last year about who was better, Brian Kelly or Billy Napier. I thought that was a ridiculous question based on what Brian Kelly had accomplished. Thought he, and speaking of coaches who get shortchanged and not respected enough, Brian Kelly in the SEC leads the list. Part of that's a little pompous, but that's okay. Hey, he's still a fantastic coach. You know, he can be as arrogant as he wants, you know, but he's a fantastic coach, and that's undeniable. And Billy Napier is a good young coach, and he has a plan. But Florida requires more than just a good coach. Florida requires a program builder. And part of being a good program builder is being able to sell yourself well enough to get the proper funds and the proper support. I'll give you an example. Bruce Pearl, probably the best program building basketball coach of the modern era. You look at what he did at Tennessee, Mike, and I know you followed it, but remember how Bruce got everybody to buy in? Even when Tennessee basketball was bad, he had 20,000 people in that arena in the third game, and nobody knew at that time that Bruce Pearl would reinvent Tennessee basketball and take them to their only Elite Eight in history. Nobody knew that was coming. Not with that cast of characters. I mean, he made, you know, Dane Bradshaw look like Bob Cousy out there. And Dane is still a fantastic player, by the way. Dane and Chris Lofton was shooting like Steph Curry. But you didn't see that before Bruce. It didn't all come together before Bruce. And suddenly there was the Pratt Pavilion practice facility that just so happened to pop up because of Bruce, right? And then Bruce leaves for whatever, I don't know, what kind of investigation we would call it, Keystone Cops and, you know, a compliance case, the way Tennessee fumbled that, and goes to Auburn. And I'm thinking to myself, Bruce is going to kill himself down there because you can't win at Auburn. You cannot win at Auburn basketball. They don't care. They don't care, Mike. The only reason they care now is because they're winning. They really don't like basketball. But I'll be doggone if he doesn't build a program and take them to the Final Four. And it's not like this arena they built is anything. It's not. Their skyboxes are on the bottom. They face out, and they're used for football. It's a crappy little arena. You can say it's a newer arena, but it's a crappy new little arena, okay? But you think it's, you know, whatever, the greatest place ever, the way he, you know, those fans pack it out. He built a program, but he sold the program. Can Billy Napier sell Florida football? We're not talking about if Billy Napier can coach. We're not talking about if he can do the X's and the O's. We're not even talking about if he can change the culture. Can he sell Florida football well enough to get the financial means that he needs to be able to buy the kind of players that it's going to take to win in the SEC? And so far, the jury's out. When he beat Utah, that was big. But he had a couple losses that set him back. And now there's doubt. And so that means his runway isn't as long for success. What happens first, Mike? Does he get fired or does he have enough success to get that runway extended? This is going to be a pivotal year for Billy Napier.
Yeah, and the schedule's not doing him any favors. Last thing for you, Mike. I really appreciate all your time. You got to pick one here. Who would you rather buy stock in right now? Josh Heupel's Tennessee program or Shane Beamer's South Carolina program? Which one do you think it could potentially go the furthest under those coaches?
Tennessee. That's not a knock on Beamer. It's more about the sleeping giant that Tennessee is. You know, Tennessee's got so much hunger and so many resources, and Josh is a fantastic coach, and he has that buy-in. You know, what we were just talking about.
Tennessee fans are bought into Josh Heupel. The excitement is back in Neyland Stadium. The buzz is back. And Tennessee fans have been bitten enough times that they were kind of cautious about this. I don't know. Feeling pretty good about Butch Jones, and then everything went sideways, right? Not going to fall for that one again. I'm done going to games. Well, guess what? Josh Heupel has created a product that is so exciting and tantalizing that Tennessee fans can't resist. And beating Alabama? Oh, my goodness. You want to have some evidence? That's it. You know, if only Florida could have gotten a win over Georgia or someone like that. But they didn't. Not yet, at least. Josh took down Alabama. The buy-in is back. The money is there. The corporate sponsors are there. Mike, you went there. You know what a giant Tennessee is in that state. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Tennessee Titans, they were a thing for a minute. The Tennessee Vols own that state, and the money is pouring in. And that's what it is right now. It's a money game. So you've got a coach that can identify talent, who has an exciting offense, a product that everybody wants to see play, that kids want to play in, and you've got the financial means. You're even state, they're changing state laws up there for the NIL, for goodness sakes. They are all in Tennessee. South Carolina doesn't have that ceiling. Shane Beamer's a good coach. He's doing some good things, and that's nice. And I'm not, but it's a nice little program. But Tennessee is a giant. It's a Goliath. Steve Spurrier, who I believe during his era was as good as any coach he ever faced. You can look at the numbers and see who he beat. I think he had a winning record against Nick Saban, for that matter. In fact, one year I think he beat Clemson, Alabama, and Tennessee in the same, something stupid like that, at South Carolina. But we saw the ceiling with Spurrier. Spurrier got to one SEC title. That was the ceiling, man. That's it. You had Lou Holtz. You had Steve Spurrier. You know, those two are the greatest coaches of our modern era, and Beamer has done a fantastic job. So I'm not. And look, he's gotten them back to respectability. 8, 9, 10 wins, probably bypass Kentucky, and who knows about, you know, Psycho Missouri from year to year. I don't think Drinkwitz is the answer, and Vanderbilt's going to Vanderbilt. We're just happy when they show up for games when they're supposed to, right? But I just don't think that they have the ceiling that Tennessee does. Tennessee has the ceiling to win championships. And woulda, coulda, shoulda, if not for the evil visored Spurrier getting in the way a couple of years, and if not for the tremendous job that Mark Richt did with David Green and David Pollack, and unfortunately Casey Clawson's injury one season. Tennessee, they've been there, right? They will be back. Their facilities plan has been masterful since the 1960s. You go up to the Tennessee campus, and I tell the people here at Georgia that. No, not football, okay? Not football, because Kirby, you know, it's Spaceship Kirby over there. Believe me, it is. They're not second. They're second to none when it comes to football facility. Nobody's getting in the way. There's no apologies. There's nothing else on the mind. It's all football all the time, all Kirby. Everybody's bought. But for Georgia's other sports, like, look at their baseball facility. You know what they say? Well, it's the Wrigley Field of the – what does that mean? That it's the smallest and the worst, but you're going to call it the Wrigley to somehow make it more endearing? I mean, there's a reason why players don't want to go. They don't have the facilities. Look at Tennessee – and on the other hand, look at Tennessee baseball. Look what's coming down the tracks for Tennessee baseball and Tony V. Look at Tennessee basketball with Rick Barnes. You know, I mentioned Bruce Pearl and revitalizing the – Rick Barnes every year. I mean, people are – you know – people are mad when Tennessee didn't win the SEC in basketball. Look at the kind of players they're getting. You know, if one of their guys would have decided to play instead of, you know, being too hurt or whatever, they might have had a different result this year. You had Final Four talent, best defensive team of the modern era in college basketball. The pieces were there. You just had one guy go south on you and ruin the team chemistry. You know, look at, so it's across the board. Tennessee is so invested. And every time I go back to Knoxville, and I got family there, as you know, it just feels like the town is just bursting at the seams. It's a fantastic time for Tennessee athletics because there's so much apprehension about what's about to happen. And that's the best feeling when you know you're on the brink of it. That's how I felt covering Tennessee basketball as a beat writer. Like, even before Bruce got it done, I felt like I knew a secret. Bruce Pearl is going to surprise some people. Like, you just knew it, right? And you just kind of feel like that about Tennessee, like they're coming. Now, can they conquer Kirby? Boy, I don't know. Kirby is one tough cat, Mike. All he thinks about is championships. And when I say they're bought in here, I mean take no prisoners bought in. I've never seen a program as bought in as Georgia football, ever, any of those programs. Alabama was close under Gene Stallings, very close. But the level of buy-in for Kirby Smart, I mean, these guys, you know, these guys are on another level, like every one of them. And every, you know, I said to Kirby the other day, I said, you know, you don't open with a Clemson or an Oregon. Are you worried that there's not going to be a sense of urgency for the opener? He said, no. He said, these guys practice against the best team in college football every day. Wow. He threw it down. He's right. Right? And they've got and listen, they've got not just, they got two quarterbacks. It's not just me. Oh, he covers George. He's a home. No, forget it. Take me out of the picture. I just did a story on the Las Vegas Heisman odds. I've never heard of a program having two quarterbacks in the top 20 of the Heisman odds, but they do. You go look it up. It's like, all right, well, whoever's at quarterback at Georgia, I guess, boom. I mean, I've never seen that. That's kind of ridiculous. Neither one of these guys have even started a game. So it's not just me who has confidence in Georgia football and Mike Bobo. And why wouldn't you have confidence in Mike Bobo? I hear some things, Mike, and I'll say this. You didn't ask, but this is just something that I think is laughable. You hear, oh, well, you know, Mike Bobo, that's really going to hurt him. Is it really? Because when I look in the history books and I say, who is the SEC's winningest quarterback of all time? Do you know who that is, Mike? Off the top of your head, I'm kind of putting you on the spot.
Probably Aaron Murray.
No, he's the all-time leading passer, and Mike Bobo was his offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach.
What Connor?
All-time winningest quarterback at uh-huh. Who?
Connor Shaw? I don't know.
You want to take another guess? Connor Shaw, South Carolina. No, he's South Carolina's winningest quarterback. Winningest SEC quarterback of all time is David Green, who was Mike Bobo's, was his quarterback's coach. All-time leading passer in SEC history is Aaron Murray. Mike Bobo, offensive coordinator, quarterback's coach. Richest number one draft pick ever. Quarterback, Matthew Stafford, Mike Bobo, offensive coordinator. Highest scoring Georgia team in history. Do you know what year that was? You're already onto the theme.
2012?
2014 Georgia.
Oh, 14.
Yeah,
okay.
Hunter Mason. So Hudson Mason was the quarterback for the highest scoring Georgia. Mike Bobo calling the plays in 2014 with a quarterback you haven't heard of. So the guy is pretty proven when it comes to having talent around him. Now, the last few years, Auburn, South Carolina, you know, kind of, you know, let's face it, you know, he didn't have a very fast race car. He's back behind the wheel of a Ferrari. He's got a lot of talent, and he's got a really easy schedule the first half of the season. So, yeah, I'm bullish on Georgia, certainly through the first half of the season. And then we'll see what happens. I mean, Josh has got a little bit of a rebuild offensively on his hands.
Yeah,
I don't expect them to be as good, you know, without him. Look, Hendon Hooker, special guy.
Mm-hmm.
Special. You know, some special receivers have moved on. There was a lot of six-year guys from that Butch Jones era that stuck it out and stuck around and kept that program going. And Pruitt recruited some good guys, too. I think, 17 or 18 of those guys were Jeremy Pruitt recruits. They're moving on. So he's got a little bit of a rebuild, but he's got resources. I think he's a really good coach. And like I said, the energy in that town is such that I do expect, you know, Tennessee to emerge as the number two team in the SEC East this year.
All right, Mike, I cannot thank you enough. That was outstanding. The audience is going to love it. Before you go, can you tell everybody where's the best place to find all your work?
Yeah, I appreciate that, Mike. You can find me on Twitter at MikeGriffith32. That's the best spot to find me, or on our DogNation.com website.
Yeah, maybe we'll see you on the cruise next year, Mike, after the Dogs win it again.
Wow, you're calling that? That's early for me. Too early for me to call that shot.
All right, Shay, so how long before I can get you to sign up for that SEC podcast cruise? I mean, they got it made over there at Dog Nation, don't they?
Oh, my gosh, man. He's had a lot of barking, buddy. I bet there is. Could you imagine a damn tailgate out in the middle of the ocean with those guys?
After winning two championships after a 41-year drought. I mean, that's got to be the best time in the world right there.
Absolutely, man. No, that's awesome. I don't know, man. I would like to. I've never done a cruise, Mike. You know, I've heard the great. I was talking to
you. May not come back if we took you.
I know, man. They say they gain 15 pounds every time you get on that boat. Could you imagine just eating whenever you want, drink whenever you want? So, but also going with a tailgate experience, that would be freaking awesome. So, yeah, I'd like to talk to some fans that's actually done it, you know. Mike, don't get me wrong. Mike told us, you know, what it was about, but I want to see somebody that was, you know, know, living the life out there, you know, holding the national championship trophies. Did Kirby, was Kirby on this boat? You know, could you imagine? Oh, brother. That'd
Kirby's
be awesome.
He's too busy recruiting. He's not, he ain't got time for no cruises.
He ain't got time. He's like David Goggins of college football, ain't he? Just grinding out there.
Well, buddy, hey, that's all I got for this episode of the show. Finish strong Friday here. Outstanding week of shows. You got anything before we sign off for the week?
No, again, man, fantastic interview. But we've had some great interviews all week, Mike. Appreciate the hustle, getting those guys in, getting some inside. I love it. You go Florida one day, you go Georgia the next. That, you can't tell me that's coincidence. So getting them fired up here. So that's what I love about college football. And brother, we'll just keep bringing the content as soon as we get it.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Shane, I appreciate you. As always, appreciate each and every one of you. And if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe, like, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. We're on all of it, and it won't cost you a dime. We really do appreciate each and every one of those, and it helps grow the show. That's all we're trying to do. But that's going to do it, Shane, for this episode of the show. We'll catch you on the next one.
All right, see you guys. Go Vols. A sleeping giant. I love that.
'Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.